Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not so new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I'd like to start right off the bat by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Very happy to have singer-songwriter Dan Ashley with us on this episode of the podcast. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Ken. Great to be on with you. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. You've been around music your whole life with guitar and piano lessons and singing in the church choir. And then you got into journalism. Was that something that you were drawn to out of the music, or did it just kind of happen?
Well, that's a great question, Ken. In a way, I suppose it just kind of happened. But, you know, I remember I was on the debate team when I was in high school and first year or two of college. And I always was interested in current affairs. So even as a teenager in junior high, I had a subscription to Newsweek magazine and a little newspaper subscription. So I was always interested. I never thought about journalism as a career. And I remember one day watching a presidential debate, and Ted Koppel was moderating, as I recall. And I remember thinking, gosh, you know, there's a great job out there. The best job out there is Ted Koppel, the journalist. That seems really interesting. So it was in the back of my mind. And then when I was in college at University of North Carolina, just down the road from your school.
And yes.
We'll talk about it. But I started taking some journalism classes and worked on student television and became really enamored with it and realized I had a passion for it and some aptitude for it. And I believe in it deeply. And so it one thing led to another. And I ended up having this career in journalism that I've just adored.
And as you alluded to, I grew up just down the road from you in Raleigh, North Carolina, and my first radio job was in your hometown of Chapel Hill. What a small world.
It's a small world indeed. I grew up and born and raised in Chapel Hill. What radio station in Chapel Hill?
It was, and it's still there, WCHL.
Oh my God, this is wild, Ken. I worked there briefly too when I was in college. In fact, fast forward from that time I was watching a presidential debate, they had me probably in 1984 cover a presidential debate that was on radio. And I covered it for CHL. I didn't know what I was doing, but I figured it out. And how we both worked at the same radio station right there on Franklin Street.
Before, and this is inside baseball really, but before I-40 made it all the way there. It got almost all the way there, and then I had to get off on 54 and drive through the country roads to get there to the end of Franklin Street. And I was there doing overnights just a couple years later after you. I think it was the summer of 87 when I was in there pushing buttons for the Larry King show.
Oh my gosh. Ken, I mean, honestly, what a small world, that tiny radio station in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. We both worked there.
That's amazing. How did you get from your career in journalism back into music?
You know, I've always loved music. I've been around it my whole life. My sister is a very skilled musician, pianist, and violinist. And I sang in the choir when I was a kid. I had lessons in every kind of instrument you could name, but I didn't really apply myself back then. I was more interested in sports and other things. But I've always loved music of all kinds, whether it's jazz, classical music, certainly rock and roll. And so fast forward, someone who appreciated music, went to concerts, had friends who performed. Fast forward to a few years ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago, I decided to take some singing lessons again because I really hadn't sung in a long time. And I almost had a little phobia about it, to be honest with you. I even though I've been in public my entire adult life, I was uncomfortable. And so a band was playing a charity golf tournament that I host every year to send underserved kids to camp. And I started talking with them while they were there, thanking them for supporting the event. And they said, well, come sing a song. And I sang a song with them. And one thing led to another. I joined the band and moved on from there and just had you know, it was for someone who had a passion for music to suddenly be making music with musicians was really, really fun. And then I left that band a few years ago to start this new project. And it's just been a blast.
And you've either opened for or appeared on stage with some a pretty impressive list of names: REO Speedwagon, Cheap Trick, Eddie Money, Melissa Etheridge, Dionne Warwick, Neil Sean from Journey, Narada, Michael Walden. It's an eclectic mix of big names that everybody knows.
It is. I've been so fortunate to make these friendships and relationships. Not all of them are my friends, but you know, I had the chance to open for Eddie Money, who was a friend of mine, Cheap Trick, REO Speedwagon. You said Rick Springfield was the last show that we played, big show that we played, 1 week, Ken, before the lockdown. And we wow. opened for Rick Springfield 1 week after, if had the show been a week later, it wouldn't have happened. And then, like you mentioned, some of the other names I've shared the stage with and performed in the same show, but on a number of those shows, I opened for that band, the bands. And it, you know, what a great privilege. Also, what a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah, I bet. I can't even imagine rattling off a list of names like this, and they're names everybody knows. And just to think that, okay, I'm going to get up and open for them. Wow. Yeah, I'm sure.
Nerve-wracking, but fun, a privilege, you know.
Now, you've had your own music reviewed in lots of great places: Hollywood Digest, Indie Pulse Music Review, Music Existence, All Access Music, and Broadway World. That's got to be really cool, because you've only been putting out your own stuff for the last 2 or 3 years, right?
Yeah, you're right, Ken. I have been recording and releasing music, I guess, probably now for close to 4 years, maybe 3.5, something like that. And we just have this new album out that just came out on the 15th of October with original material, and it's gotten some nice reviews. And you know, what a privilege. I approach it the way I do my wonderful job at KGO-TV, the ABC station in San Francisco, where I've been so proud to work for many years, and they're so kind and supportive of everything I do in the community, music included. But I approach songwriting as I do my job. I'm a storyteller, and so I try to talk in songs about things that affect people and try to tap into those emotions and their feelings around it.
And you had mentioned the new album. It's called Out There. Just came out
October 15th. Yeah, exactly right.
And you do have Christmas music, and we're going to get to that in a minute, I promise, for everybody who's listening. But the new album just came out. It's called Out There. Can you tell us a little bit about that before we get to the Christmas song?
Yes, and I'm so excited to talk with you about the Christmas song too, Ken. You're kind to bring up the album. This song, Out There, is a collection of material. I wrote all the songs with my amazing friend and writing partner, an incredibly talented producer and musician, Bill Bentley. We wrote all of the songs with the exception of one called Better Life, which was written by another friend of mine and a music manager and consultant to me, Steve Belkin and Hugh James, his writing partner. But these songs reflect my observations and my experiences. And for example, the title track, Out There, ever since I was a kid, I've been fascinated by the cosmos and what's out there and how the enormous distances involved. It's just also mind-boggling. I used to lie on my driveway as a kid in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, stare at the sky and daydream about it. I guess it would be night dream if it was the night sky. But and this song, Out There, on the title track, it asked the question, it occurred to me, if there is life out there somewhere in the universe, have they figured out a better way to coexist with one another? Have they found a way to not be cruel, not to fight with one another, not to be at odds with each other? Have they found a way to cooperate and live harmoniously? So I was asking that question in this song. Other songs like River City reflects the kind of the divided nature of our country right now. Lucky Stars was written for my wife. I woke up in the middle of the night with this song in my head, thanking my lucky stars for her. So my wife, Angela, that song is about her, but it's about anyone who's ever had a great love in their life. And so these are all songs that are very personal. I wrote one called Redbud Road, which was the street I grew up on in Chapel Hill, Ken. And it's about my childhood, but in a lot of ways, it's about many people's childhoods.
My favorite time of year is the title of your Christmas song, from a couple of years ago. What led you to, as you're finding your way in music and you're releasing your own stuff, what led you to a Christmas song?
You know, it is truly my favorite time of year. And I just love everything that the season seems to represent. There's that period of time between Thanksgiving and Christmas where we all sort of treat one another a little more kindly, I think. And there's a sort of a spirit in the air. And I'm a sappy guy. I'll tell you right now, Ken, I believe in all of that stuff. I watch the same Christmas movies every single year. I just think the spirit of the season is wonderful. So I wanted to record a Christmas song, and I'm actually going to do a Christmas album at some point here. And I was set to record a different song, and I just didn't feel like it was right. So I searched literally days before we were going to record. I searched for a different song. I have one that is partially written that I've written that I'm going to record, but I needed something that I thought would really captivate people and interest people, but I didn't want something that everybody's done. So I found this great song called My Favorite Time of Year, written by a guy named Lee Hagerwood of the Florin Street Band. He's in the UK. I'd never heard the song, and I happened to hear it, and literally 8 bars in, Ken, I thought, this is the song. I love the vibe and the message, and it's you've never heard it, but it's familiar at the same time. So I recorded it. I talked to Lee in England, and he was very sweet to let me record it. And he actually told me when I sent him the version, he said, you know, of the people that have covered this, yours is my favorite version. So that meant a lot to me.
Wow, that's great. And your version is different enough that when I listened to it, I didn't realize that, because I've played the Florin Street Band's song for years, but it's almost like it's a completely different song.
Oh, you have played it. So you're familiar with the song.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, it's a great tune, isn't it? And we just wanted to make it our own, of course.
Mm-hmm. I love it when an artist can take a song, whether everybody knows it or not, but they're able to put their own spin on it. You hear, I don't want to mention any names, and I don't want it to sound like I'm picking on anybody, but you hear some singers and some bands who decide they're going to do a Christmas record, and they pull out lots of the old tired chestnuts, and they play them just like they've always been played. And it just doesn't sound like they believe it. You know, right. It sounds like they're just punching a clock and they're just doing it. But when I listen to My Favorite Time of Year, I get, you know, you're able to capture that Christmas feeling. It feels like this is somebody who believes what he's saying.
You know, Ken, you're brilliant to notice that what you've seen when other people have covered songs. There's nothing wrong with it. But I do believe in it. And that's why the song I was going to record just didn't speak to me. It was a very familiar song, but I thought, I'm not going to add to this body of work. I'm not going, you know, me singing chestnuts roasting on an open fire or Dreaming of a White Christmas, and go down the list of songs. I'm not going to do a better version than Bing Crosby or, you know, name the artist. There's no point. And so it's so iconic and so familiar to people. I wanted a song that I felt, and I didn't feel the song I was going to record. And to be honest, at the moment, I don't remember even which song it was. But when I heard Lee's song, My Favorite Time of Year, it spoke to me immediately, and I felt it, everything about it. It had enough of that old-time, traditional, nostalgic view of Christmas with kind of a modern take, and I just loved it.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. When I listen to both versions, that's the feeling that you get. And, you know, Dan, I'm sure you know that doing what I do, I hear lots of Christmas music, and it's year round. And it's hard to come up with a song where I get to feel that, because I hear, you know, I'm going to get probably 100 versions of Mariah Carey's Christmas song sent to me this year by different singers and bands. And it just doesn't have it anymore. And there are so many that I'll get that just don't take me there. But My Favorite Time of Year delivers. It does that.
I'm so flattered. Thank you. I'm just honored that you feel that way about the song, given how much Christmas music you see. Thank you.
Yeah. I get about 1,000 songs sent to me every year, and I'm not going to play them all. I don't feel like they're all ready. And a lot of it is just almost doing it by rote. But a song like this, like My Favorite Time of Year, is one of those rare ones that that give you that Christmas spirit feeling. So,
well,
so thank you.
Thank you. Well, you're so kind. Ken, I'm so truly flattered that you feel that way. You see so much Christmas music, and just to be included on your show and to have the song played, I really am honored. It's thank you. You're very kind. I have one question for you. You know, I'm a journalist.
Okay. Fire away.
You must be in the Christmas spirit all year long. You must love it. It must be your favorite time of year too.
It is my favorite time of year. And I try really hard to keep it, you know, Dickens, A Christmas Carol is one of my favorite stories.
Me too.
You get to the end of that and Scrooge is saying that I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. And I do try to do that. Some days are better than others, but sure. You know, I'm only human, but it's funny because that was written, you know, 150, 160 years ago. And at Christmas time, people will say how we should feel like this all year. But then you get to April and you mention anything about Christmas or listen to a Christmas song and you get a dirty look and, you know, put that away. Don't rush the season, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. It's amazing how quickly it, for a lot of people, it's like a hat that they put on. And then in January, they take it off and they put it away for next year. Jerry Seinfeld used to have a really funny bit about Christmas trees, that the way people snap out of that Christmas spirit, because you get this tree and you put it up in your house and you decorate it. And then right after Christmas, it's in the trash on the side of the road.
It's so true.
It is.
You know, it's so true. And you seem like a person that's optimistic by nature. I always have been as well and been grateful for that. And sometimes people will look at us like we're crazy when we say that. I mean, I take the messages and the beauty and the warmth of that season is very, very special. And you don't have to be, in some ways it transcends religion. It's about, of course it's a religious holiday, but it's more than that too. It belongs to people in a wider way. And I do try, maybe not as overtly as you, I do try to keep that spirit alive in me all year long by trying to be friendly and warm and upbeat as much as I possibly can be. And I try to be kind with others. Just a nice way to live. And Christmas reminds us every year that, boy, life is nice when you have that in your heart.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. And I would imagine that I can almost hear all the ears perking up for people who have been listening to this. When they heard you say that you were thinking about a Christmas album, is there more to it than that? It's just something you would like to do? Are there plans?
You know, there are plans. It's funny. It's not easy. I write a lot of songs and have lots of songs in the works all the time, but my writing partner, Bill Bentley, and I have talked about it. It's not easy to write good songs, and I was intending to have a Christmas album, I had hoped, this year, but we started working on Out There, and that became the focus, and I have some terrific musicians that came into that project when they heard what we were doing and joined us, so we sort of ended up doing that. We are going to do that. I hope by next year you and I are talking about a Christmas album, and it will be a couple of unique covers that, like My Favorite Time of Year, that are less familiar to most people that we can do something with. And maybe I'll take one really well-known song and do something unusual with it, but most of it will be original material. And I'd like to try my hand at writing some Christmas music. And I have one Christmas song kind of underway that I really like. And I hope next year we'll talk about that, Ken.
I look forward to that. Something else that, speaking of songs that everybody knows, something else that you often do that I'm very impressed with is that you are often invited to sing the national anthem. And that has got to be one of the most difficult songs to sing, especially in front of a giant audience.
Oh my goodness. You know, when I first told my mother, God rest her soul, she passed away sadly 4.5 years ago, I'm being invited to sing the national anthem. She's always, was always very protective and worried about me. She said, oh, you can't sing the national anthem. You can't do that. She said the same thing. It's so hard. And I said, well, I'm going to do it. And, you know, much like Christmas and how my belief in what that season represents, I'm passionate about what our country represents. And not to say we don't do things that we need to be critical of what our country does as well and look at it, and there's no Pollyanna attitude, but there's, as I like to say, and I've heard, it's not my line, but there's nothing wrong with America that can't be fixed by what is right with America. So I try to remember that too. But singing the national anthem is a privilege, and it is a daunting song to sing. It makes you a better singer learning to sing it. But to go from being uncomfortable about singing many years ago to a few years ago singing the national anthem at the Golden State Warriors game in front of 20,000 people on a Saturday night, was a big personal accomplishment to tackle your fear. And, you know, I did a good job with it. It wasn't Whitney Houston's version of the national anthem, but I did my best on it. And I've been invited to do it many, many times. I always say yes, not only because I enjoy the challenge, but I believe in it. I think it's a nice tradition that we do at the beginning of sporting events or major events.
For anybody who's listening who thinks, that's not so hard, I've sung it 100 times, there is a huge difference from being in the stands and singing with however many other people are there.
Hundreds of thousands, yeah.
Yeah, there's a huge difference from doing that to being down on the field or mid-court or wherever, and all eyes are on you, and you've got the mic, and you're leading this song, which is not an easy song to sing. And if you think that I'm making too much of it, try just to sing it in front of just your wife or your kids, just one person, and they're not going to help you, and you just do it. Just try that, and then magnify that by 20 or 30,000, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
I love it. Take the Ken Kessler challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Take the challenge and let me know.
You know, I remember when I sound checked record yourself singing it on your phone and then play it back. When I went and sound checked at the Warriors game that night, it was a Saturday night, packed, 20,000 people, Steph Curry, you know, Draymond Green, all the Warriors superstars are there. When I sound checked in the afternoon, empty stadium, lights are on, and I sang. I felt really good about it. Unfortunately, I had a really bad cold that day, like crazy bad cold, but I managed to fight my way through it to sing it. But you know, I felt, oh, this, I feel comfortable. Sounds good. It sounds great in the room. I'm echoing. It's echoing the way I want. And then when I did it for real, what they don't tell you, and I didn't really realize when I sound checked there, you're there with the color guard and all the players from both teams, and you're in the middle of the floor in this crowd of people. And all of a sudden the lights go out and a spotlight hits just you. And I thought, oh my goodness, what have I got myself into? I mean, you feel, it's like you're standing there in your underwear.
Yeah. Yeah. You say that.
A lot of pressure.
You say that and I'm thinking, oh, that's a nightmare. Oh my God. I just can't even imagine. And then you've got to open your mouth and sing this song that is a hard song to sing and that everybody knows. Everybody in that arena or that stadium or whatever, they all know it.
They do. And they can tell if you know it.
Yes. Absolutely.
You know what's so interesting about that? And I often feel this way when I perform too, with the band in front of people. What's interesting, being a public person in my job as a news anchor, I run the risk of being on YouTube, making a mistake singing the national anthem, right? And, you know, having people poke fun at you. That didn't worry me. It's so interesting. I remember the emotion I had. And I had this when I play too with a band. And many people will relate to this, even if they don't sing, in other walks of life, whatever it is that where you're doing something that supports an effort that a team is making or a group is making, you can relate. And that is, I wasn't nervous for myself, as odd as that may sound. I wasn't worried that, boy, if I blow this, they're going to make fun of me on YouTube, or I'm going to look bad. What worried me was, I don't want to be the weak link in this giant effort that the Warriors are putting on to entertain this crowd and to put on this event. And I don't want to be the weak link because I don't want to let the side down, if that makes sense. And,
oh yeah,
you know, and same thing when I play with the band, certainly I don't want to look bad in front of the audience, but I don't want to let the band down and not do my job and blow it. And that was the pressure for me.
Well, and especially with sports can be so superstitious that if you mess up the anthem, and then your team loses, everybody's going to blame you.
That's true. That's glad we didn't have this conversation before I sank. Just one more.
Yeah. One more thing you need to worry about.
But I'm funny about that, Ken. I love, life should be an adventure when you can make it. And I'm grateful for any opportunity I have. I'm a little reckless too, in terms of, I don't really have a fear of failure. I'll give anything a try. I mean, literally, if they come over to me and said, if the coach and Steve Kerr come over and said, hey, listen, Steph just hurt his knee, would you mind suiting up tonight? I go, yeah, I mean, I can't. I mean, yeah, I played basketball as a kid. I'm not any good. I go, yeah, sure. Give me some shorts. I'll play. I'm a little dangerous that way. I would. Because I think, what a great experience. I'll do it, sure.
One other thing I want to ask you about, and this sort of goes back into at least the spirit of Christmas, is your foundation, Rock the Casa. Oh,
thank you.
Yeah. What is it? And what can you tell us about it?
You know, I'm involved. My job as a news anchor in San Francisco gives me a unique place in the community, and I'm very grateful for it. And I try to use that platform to do a little bit of good here and there where I can. And I'm on a number of charitable boards, and have been for many, many years. And so I started a foundation, 8 or 9 years ago, to support some of these organizations that help underserved kids in need. For example, I mentioned the golf tournament. I'm on the board of Friends of Camp Concord, and we send underserved kids to summer camp, all expenses paid, at Lake Tahoe. And in the 26 years I've hosted the golf tournament, we've just sent our 10,000th, actually we're over 10,000 kids to summer camp. So Rock the Casa was my foundation that I founded to support Friends of Camp Concord, court-appointed special advocate, which helps kids who've been removed from their homes because of abuse and neglect. I'm on that board. Big Brothers, Big Sisters, other programs that help underserved kids in need. So I created this event, Rock the Casa. We have a big concert every year to raise money for those causes, to help support underserved kids who need a little help.
Wow, that's terrific. I'm very glad that I asked about that.
Well, you're kind. It means a lot to me.
What's the best way for people to connect with you? Is it through your website or social media?
You know, thank you for asking. My website for music is danashleymusic.com. They can always connect with me on Twitter and Facebook at Dan Ashley Music, or go to my professional page as the anchor at ABC7, which is Dan Ashley ABC7. And you can reach me on Twitter and Facebook that way too. But any, I always respond to everyone who reaches out, no matter what, and I'm happy to do so. Again, it's a privilege in my job, Ken, that people would want to reach out. So,
the Christmas single, My Favorite Time of Year, the new album out there, and the rest of your music, is that all on your website that people can
listen? It is on the website. It is, and you can also get it wherever you buy music, whether it's Apple or Amazon, Spotify, any place you get music, all of that stuff is available there, all of my material.
Terrific. Dan, thanks so much for joining us. This has been a lot of fun chatting with you about a million different things.
Ken, you're just incredibly kind to have me on. It's been a pleasure. You're a delight and a hometown boy. So I love to connect with you.
And thank you so much for listening, helping us share some Christmas spirit, and for helping this podcast continue to grow. Since you're listening now, you've obviously found us somewhere. But if there's another site you like to use for podcasts, check out our podcast page on our website for the complete list of everywhere you can listen to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. And again, the website is www.soundsofchristmas.com. Then just click on the podcast tab. For the Sounds of Christmas station, to listen to the music, you'll need to stick with our website or our app in the Google Play Store. If you have comments or suggestions, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through our website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.